everybody. Welcome to the Canine Connection Podcast. Today, Lori and I have a guest. Her name is Crystal Wing. She is a fellow instructor of mine at the Fenzi School. She also, I think, lives a pretty cool life traveling all over the country now that she's a retired teacher and giving seminars all over the place. And she has some super interesting topics that she instructs on, kind of not what people like typically do, like, oh, this is how we teach this behavior or that behavior, which I'm super excited to talk about. She also has very recently started her own podcast, 3 episodes. The first 3 episodes are really, really good. I love them. It's Aww. Called What's on Top. But I am going to let Crystal tell all of you about herself, because she knows more about it than I do.
Well, hello, friends. I really appreciate you bringing me on. I love your podcast, and it's such an honor to be here. I did start a podcast. I was a co-host of the Canine Detection Collaborative for, it was like 151 episodes. Like, wow, we really...
That's a lot. We had a lot.
Oh, my gosh. And I went into that kicking and screaming because I'm like, I am not a podcast type person. I'm a high school art teacher and I train dogs on the side. And, you know, this is my passion. And life has changed a lot really fast.
That's good.
Like insane. So kind of my thing lately is do the hard thing. And it's just, it's amazing what doing the hard thing can do for you. I have lived by a schedule for, well, my whole life until now. And so there's a lot of adjusting that's happening in my world. I taught high school art for 23 years and I early retired in, I guess July was my last official day, but I'd already started doing dog training traveling. And last year was so hard. You guys, it was so hard.
Really?
So teaching high school art. And then at least once a month, I was traveling to do a workshop somewhere in the United States. So I would get done teaching Friday.
Oh, while teaching, not after teaching. You stop teaching.
Yeah. So this is while teaching at least once a month.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I was on Friday, leaving the classroom, grabbing the dogs, and then driving like 6, 7, 8 hours sometimes to go teach the next morning. And then I would teach Saturday and Sunday at whatever state I was in. And then Sunday we'd get down like around 5 or 6 and I would drive through the night to get home to get back to my classroom first thing Monday morning.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like I'm out.
And this was the same time of doing like webinars. And so I was doing at least one webinar every other month or no, every 3 months, I guess. And then I was still attending seminars and I'm also the training director for Evolution Working Dog Club. And then I also was working on my certification for my human remains dog. So it was like,
oh my God. Wow. So
I was working really hard to build this future that I'm now in. And this future that I'm now in, I feel like I'm kind of like, oh my gosh, what do I do now? I don't have a schedule.
See, that's so I'm like the opposite. I just kind of like, I'm going to stop this and jump into that. I'm not smart enough to do all the like prep work first to
make it easier
transition. I'm just like, oh yeah, I'll go do that now.
But I won't even say that I was smart enough to do that. I was just doing it because I loved it and it was just too much. So then it kind of became this, you know, well, What am I going to do? Because I can't keep this up. This is too much.
So that was the early retirement due to that? Like the decision to do that was because you needed to let something go?
Well, I'm going to fault Denise Finzi a lot for that one. So we became really good friends. And then I needed some confidence to know that I could do this. And she gave me that confidence along with my club members. And I had a friend here in club, Elizabeth, that she had retired early. And so she from public education, so she knew how to do it and what was going on. And they both kind of kept pushing and, you know, like you could do this, you could do this. And it wasn't even on my radar. I'm like, no, I got 4 more years. I got 4 more years. And my body is just breaking so fast. And I thought, you know what? You guys are right. I need to take advantage while I can still use this body to some sort of degree to do the thing I love. Because I do protection sports. Mm. And part of that is I'm the idiot that wears a suit. And I teach dogs to bite me really hard.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, then, that's hard. That's it's super hard. Very hard.
Yeah. And then I also do IGP. And that's my foundation sport. And with that one, you wear a sleeve. And I've taught helper camps and decoy things for, I'm teaching other women how to work dogs. And it's one of my favorite things to do. It is so much fun. And even like I would do a detection seminar and somehow at some point the suit ends up coming out and somebody's learning how to get their first bites. Like it just happens.
Right.
It's just so much fun and it's so much confidence building and it's that adrenaline and the just the rush that happens with it. And I just love sharing that with people. So just seeing that my body was breaking down and it just felt right. And
yeah, you made the choice to follow your passion, which is like, I'm obsessed with that. Like it's all I tell people to do all the time. I'm like, stop following the traditional route. If you have a passion, you should always follow your passion. At least that's what I think.
The easiest thing, if I say easiest or the four more years.
The safest thing, right? The thing safest. That makes us feel the most safe.
Yeah.
Right. Because a lot of times it's an illusion. It's not necessarily the better choice. It's the illusion of a better choice. And because people in general are not comfortable taking risks, they will instinctively advise you not to take the risk. Right. The people that will advise you to take the risk are the tiny little handful of people that have done it themselves.
Mm-hmm. And that's a huge point. You know, people can judge me or think what they want. The number one thing that I feel now that I didn't feel before as a high school teacher is I feel safe right now. I had a lot of just bad experiences with our district and how they chose to do things, and it didn't feel safe. Like even this year after leaving, you know, they set a bomb off at our assistant principal's house that made national news. It just didn't feel safe anymore. And you can take that with whatever you want. You can judge me by saying that. But my perception of where I was, and I'm in a really good school and a really good district, and I just didn't feel safe. Every day, I would go there, and the first thing I would do was go through my safety protocol. Is my chair by the door? I have a thing of rolling pins as weapons to be able to protect ourselves. Like, every day, it was this constant, you know, just on your toes, making sure you could keep track of all the kids and know what you're going to do if any moment there's an emergency. And I'm a person that when something happens, I go forward. It's just my reaction. Mm-hmm. And in every single scenario that they did for us, for our active shooter drills, I was killed within the first 30 seconds of every drill. Like that stuff gets in your head. It truly gets in your head. So I'm glad to be out of that.
And boy, now the world has changed, huh?
Yeah, it's changed a lot. And so I miss my kids. And I went back to school for the first time just 2 days ago. And I was dropping off. I brought some lunch for one of my friends and picked up some blankets another person had for rescue dogs. And I saw a couple of those kids that I miss a whole bunch. I loved that, but I know that I made the right choice. So when we say, break yourself out of that comfort zone and do the hard thing, I feel so much safer now. And it's just, it after feels so good. Risk. I feel like I can breathe,
let your guard down a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Like my whole nervous system is just like,
And the nice thing about working for yourself is like, you can kind of set that environment, right? Like when I took this huge leap, bought my own facility, I was able to set everything up. Like we had diffusers, we played calming music, like the whole environment, the whole culture, everything was about, we only say nice things. We only talk about positive thing.
Yeah.
This whole, everything there was just about, and it just became this like really nice place to be because we had control over that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But that was after taking an enormous risk all by myself, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a really good point. So, I mean, I think in general, people tend to be averse to taking risks because they always think it's going to end up, you know, everyone always looks at how it can turn bad. Right. And I'm like, well, let's look at all the ways it could turn out better.
Yeah.
You know, but that's just not human nature, right?
So it's not at all.
But it is a great lesson for everyone that, you know, it's all about perspective. And I do feel that if you are really passionate about something, then you're going to put in the work because it's not even going to feel like work. And
that,
if you put in the work, you will be successful. Like that's just a fact. It's a tried and true recipe for, you know, centuries, right? You work hard, it works out.
and the biggest thing I told
about it.
Yeah.
Then, Yeah.
Well, and the biggest thing I saw one of the admins as I was sneaking in, and you know, he's like, "Do you have any regrets?" And I'm like, "No, I don't really feel like I live with regrets often. I feel like I learn and I grow, and so it doesn't feel like regrets." And it was interesting because I said, "I think the biggest thing that has been so helpful for me is I'm still teaching. I'm just getting to teach differently. If I wasn't able to teach, because that's my why."
Yeah.
And that's where, as long as I'm teaching and I'm helping and I feel like I'm making a difference, that is all I need in life. Well, and then the rest of it is just enough to feed my dogs and pay for their insurance and medical.
Right. I think it's super interesting is like, so, you know, on the surface, people will be like, "Oh, okay. So, oh, I would make an assumption maybe. Like, oh, so you go and you teach everybody about IGP and about bite sleeves and biting and bite sports." And I actually think, which is pretty, is even more interesting, is that you were an art teacher. Now, yeah. I am not, I just started writing a blog on this because I've been thinking about this a lot. Because I am not creative. Like, I literally can't draw a stick figure. If you say to me, "Draw something," I get anxiety. Because I just can't do it. I can't, if you ask me, like, match colors and the walls in my house, I literally spend like $300 on sample paints because I can't figure it out. I can't hold a tune at all. I mean, I sing, but not in front of anybody because they're like, "What is your problem?" I dance like the whitest of white people, right? Like, but I do feel like I'm creative when it comes to dog training. Like, uh-huh. That's where I feel like I'm creative. But that's not something people typically think of with dog training. So I feel like you're teaching a lot, from what I see anyway, about being creative. And you're, and this is, Lori made this really good point when we were talking about this, is that, like, when you go and teach a seminar somewhere, most of the time we don't know those people. So they're coming to at us with like this snapshot of a problem and we have to solve it, right? And that means you have to be a little bit creative and you have to be very open-minded. You can't kind of say, "Well, you know, every time this is what I do for this," because it just doesn't work out. So I feel like you're taking your creativity from teaching art, which is very creative, and you're really applying it to dog training. And you're like, why don't you talk about like some of your topics, like your class topic right now is not what people would typically think of as a dog training topic. Right.
Yeah. I was hoping that people would even sign up for it because they're like, "This is weird." So one of my gig, or, you know, everybody has their little niche and mine is play. I am so passionate about people learning how to speak their dog's language through play. Mm-hmm. And I'm not thinking of play as a transactional piece. Like, it is that, and we can use it as that, but it's always as a foundation relationship-based piece. And the thing that I'm teaching right now, it's the 6 C's. And I found out, I went to my friend's puppy class and she introduced this concept of having this intention. And she said, "Choose a C." And it was a couple different C's, I think, but the ones that stood out to me, I really believed in compassion and connection as the kind of the why behind it, the foundation. And then I built that into clarity. And then the clarity is what builds confidence. And then the confidence is building into, you can now be curious. And once you're curious, you can be creative. And so being a 6-week class and having this 6 C's, that's what I've been kind of teaching from. So it's about having intention and having this kind of purpose behind what you're teaching. So it's not necessarily about teaching this behavior, but how can we do it through these different lenses? Mm-hmm. And it is amazing. Even this is kind of off topic side quest. I had to go to a foot doctor this week and it sucks. He told me I have to be off my foot for a month. That's not okay.
It's like my fear.
And he said in a month I go back and it should be 30 to 40% better. Oh, and I'm like, wait, 30%. So how much longer? He's like, "Well, I'll just see you back in a month," because he realized like how bad this is for me. My ADHD brain of, I talk on the phone and I probably walk a mile, you know, like there's no sitting still. So this is like so I'm a little bit on edge. But what I loved about the interaction I had with him, I've never been that confident talking to a doctor before. And I really credit doing all of this research and just seeing all the things that I'm teaching for my dog, how it's applying to myself. And I'm hearing that from my students over and over again. And the whole compassion piece about, you know, I went in there and I told him straight out, I'm like, "I'm really stressed right now," you know, and it's just, I love thinking about training and even just life through these 6 C's. And it's making such a big difference. And I'm not saying sexy because that was also a joke. Because do you know that song, I'm Sexy and I Know It?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first time that I told a friend, I was like, okay, I'm really excited about this sexy thing. And they're like, what? They're like, I'm sexy and I know it. I'm like, no, 6C.
That's so funny.
So I'm doing an approaching through these different lenses. And even if I'm not telling somebody that, that's what's happening in my brain now. So my creativity is all for my curiosity. Everything in my training is based through curiosity. I am always asking questions, and I don't approach anything knowing the answer. I approach everything asking the question and looking for information. Mm-hmm. And that's how I've taught high school for all those years. I can't go into it knowing any of those kids because they change minute to minute. These are teenagers. I mean, if you can survive a classroom of teenagers, you can survive anything because those little brains are just constantly changing from one moment to the next, you know? So I'm just genuinely curious about the situation, the environment. And so that's how I approach everything. And that's where the seminars are so fun because I go into it asking lots of questions and I try to teach people how to ask better and different questions. And I think that's the real trick behind creativity. And when people say that they're not creative or they're not confident or they're not curious, those are all skills we build. You're not just built, you know, you're not just born with those. Some people are innately more curious. Mm-hmm. Like I was innately more, I guess, artistically gifted, but because I liked it, I pursued it. And therefore I got better at it because it's something I wanted to do. Just like dog training. Mm-hmm. I can't stop thinking about it. Like I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah, same. That's how we are.
And that's what makes me so curious to keep asking more questions. And it just fuels you to just keep going more and getting more. That's where the creativity comes from. And probably the most helpful thing I ever learned when I was teaching high school, and I transfer all of this, is for critique, the kids have to look at artwork. And basically, as an art teacher, what am I teaching kids? I'm teaching them to notice. I'm teaching them to observe and be aware. And so I do a like, wish, wonder for all of our critiques because kids want to start off, and this is, I'll say kids, but you can say anybody. You start off by saying, oh, I like that. I don't like that. I mean, that's kind of, we just start at judgment, you know, and that's about all we know to say. And so instead we start to break it down and I say, I want you to say, and for the dog world, I say, I want you to say something that you like about your training, but that what you did and what you like that your dog did. Because we are so pre-programmed to see all the crap, all the stuff that's so terrible. The first thing I would always do, well, that was a terrible session because this, this, and this. Uh-huh. So now I'm changing that mindset. First thing I have to say after every session, what do I like not only about my dog and what they did, but what do I like about what I did? The wish, that's the part that comes a little easier. I wish that that deer hadn't come across the field.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I wish that the, you know, whatever, that's my wish, but then typically creates my wonder. And wonder is the creativity. Because I'm open and I'm taking information and I'm being curious, my wonder creates the I wonder if this, and that creates my next training plan too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a person that can plan very well, and I don't tend to be very consistent about finishing things. And that's okay sometimes because it's just a matter of what inspires you and what keeps you going and what are you excited to do? Follow that. And if you keep doing that, you're just going to keep getting better. But that's where the creativity piece kicks in. It is not something that you're just born with. It is a skill you have to build. And the biggest way to build creativity, reading a dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what people really struggle with. Like, they're so, like, I'm obsessed with the why, right? Reading the dog and the why. Like, that's always been my obsession. But, like, as an instructor, like, what are people obsessed with? How do I fix this?
Right. Yep.
How do I fix this? Not, well, why did your dog do that? I don't know. How do I fix it? Right? Like they want the answer to solve the problem instead of looking at it like, why did this happen? How can I solve this problem? I also think sometimes they're just overwhelmed because dog training is so complex. Like there's so many different things going on like at the same time. But like what, like if the person has a problem of there's so many different things going on. Like, because I'll say to a student, I'll give you an actual example. Maybe that'll make it easier, right? So students miss dogs making a mistake all the time. And so they miss it. And then they inadvertently are basically telling the dog it's correct, right? And so then I'm always like, so then I'm trying to say, well, why did you miss that? Like, dude, are you looking at the dog? Yes. You didn't see the dog looked away. No. How did you not see the dog look away? It just happened right. I'm standing right here next to you. I saw it. How did you not see it? And so there are two things that
the feet, because I'm trying to say to the person in this moment right now, where is your brain? Like, I want to understand, how is it that you missed this and didn't read the dog or read what's happening in the moment? Right. Because I am very good at being in the moment, moment by moment. So the two most common things are, one is there's just so much going on. They're like, well, I was thinking about, you know, I have to turn and I have to do this and the dog has to do that. And so there's so much in there going on that they're missing what's right in front of them. So that's like one problem. And then the other problem, I think, is a confirmation bias.
Yes.
That they want it to be right. And actually, I can't even claim this as my, like, because I'm standing there with somebody I trained with the other day. And my other training partner missed it. And I looked at her and I go, why? Why does this happen? Why do people do this? And she looked at me and she says, in this case, I think it's confirmation bias. I'm like, you're right. He wants the dog to be right so bad that he's like subconsciously not
seeing it.
The blinders, yeah.
And I'm like, so I'm like, okay, have a confirmation bias towards look for the mistakes. But I don't even know if that's the answer. But anyway, those are my two observations. So like, how would, like, do you have any suggestions or like, how would you apply this whole thing of no, pay attention in the moment, read your dog or whatever, that, you know what I'm saying? I'm just,
I have so many thoughts.
Good.
So this week in class is creativity week, and it's what we've built for this entire time. And I'm just desperate to have another week, because I feel like all we're doing is getting all of the pre-creativity things, which is the perception and the reading the dog part. Mm-hmm. And that's what today was about. And we're not even getting a chance to really like dive into all the really fun creative games, you know, and how to approach things. But what I really realize is that the entire class has been about curiosity, because that's what all of my training is about. And the curiosity is what's leaving you open to be able to have those moments to be creative. And today I had a huge aha moment. So the timing is perfect for this. I was like, I'm going to record a podcast on this. I'm like, wait, I'm going to be talking to patron Lori. We can do it on their podcast. So yay.
There you go.
I've been so behind on episodes. I'm like, I so have all these ideas about being a beginner and what that means. And I'm so stoked about that. I have all these thoughts and about intention. I'm like, but this darn class keeps getting in my way. No.
Yeah, not enough hours in the day.
Oh, there aren't. But there's a thing called the critical analysis in art, for critiquing artwork. So I'm going back to that. And that's where Like Wish Wonder came from. And this kind of protocol is about describe, analyze, interpret, and judge. And those are the four steps to your critical analysis. Do you think that's what people do when they're looking at their training? Do they do it in that order? Not at all.
They judge. Yeah.
They judge first. It has to be in those steps. This was so freaking huge for me this morning. I was like, I immediately called Nancy. I was like, Nancy! She's like, I haven't had coffee yet. But the important part about it is that you start with your description, right? So when you're talking about being in the moment, a lot of people don't know how to be in the moment. Okay, so Patri, you do a lot of mindset stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get in the moment?
Just practice. Like, so I've done a ton of meditation, which meditation makes you realize that your brain is just doing things constantly, right? So I have an 80, like a brain that's going 8,000. It's like a school of fish.
Yeah.
Right. Like multiple schools of fish. Like, it's insanity in there. Like, it's just mayhem. So if I followed all those threads, which is what I used to do, you're just like all over the place, right?
Yeah.
So it starts with awareness. Like, I am aware now of what my brain is doing, right? And so then I can let go. Like, I cannot follow the thread, and I can just take a deep breath and go, okay, I'm letting everything go. Breathe, focus in the moment. And then I also think part of why I can focus so well when I train dogs in part is because I'm like Forrest Gump. So if someone says to me, take 3 steps forward and 3 steps right, I will do exactly that to the letter every time. So I was taught at some point way back in the day that when I train my dog, if I want 100% engagement from my dog, I have to give 100% engagement to the dog first, right?
Yes. Preach.
So someone says, you must be focused on your dog 100% of the time. So Forrest Gump,
That's what I do, right? So I think I've been doing it for decades now. Like, it's a habit. Like, I feel like it's a contract. Like, I owe it to my dog. Like, if I don't do that, I'm bad, right? Like, how can I ask my dog to pay attention to me? How can I ask my dog to give me, you know, their attention if I'm thinking about my grocery list? And I've also had dogs that have kept me incredibly honest. So Tyler, like, this dog, literally, I'd be healing him, right? And once he was fully trained, we were super in sync. So I'd be healing him, and all of a sudden his eyes would start flickering, which would catch my attention, and I'd go, oh shit, I'm thinking about my grocery list. And I'd go, sorry, dude, focus on him. The eye flicking went away. Like, that's how we were, right? And all my dogs, they will hold me accountable. Like, if I start to flake out, they catch me on it every time. So I think it's a combination of A, like, that's what I was told to do, and therefore I follow what I've been told. And I also do feel like we ask so much of them that it's the least we could do, right?
Yes.
And so that's I think is a big motivator for me to be present in the moment. But in terms of the actual skill of doing it is something I had to develop by practice, by working on it, by, like, mm-hmm. reading book, you know, I've read 1,000 books, and I worked really hard on becoming aware of what my brain is doing and where it's going, and, like, then coming back and stopping that, right? And, like, so I think it's both things. It's multiple things.
So, Lori, how do you stay in the now?
It's a work in progress all the time. It is. I'm newer to the sport. You know, I've only been doing it for about 7-8 years now. And, like, I didn't even realize I'm the same way. It must be, like, just the common denominator of dog trainers. We have that ADHD brains. Our brains are going 9,000 miles an hour. But it really did not come to light for me until I really started having to, that was affecting my training and definitely my trialing, because I wasn't staying in the moment. And then, you know, A, B, and C would start to happen and things would unravel. And that was, like, the biggest piece that was missing and is the biggest thing that I'm working on now, staying in the moment, staying on task, staying on the plan. It's, you know, I am now so now mindful of it and constantly consciously thinking about that all the time. I'm hoping eventually I don't have to think about it so much, but right now I do. Like, I have to really be concentrating on concentrating, kind of thing, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's where I say, make your training plan to teach yourself how to be in the moment. That's the first step, because we're here. All three of us are saying it. We need to be in the moment. And there's lots and lots of skills and ways to do that. Mm-hmm. So you have to find those things that work for you. The thing that works for me, I do the five senses. That's a little kind of grounding moment that I have. A big part of me, if I don't have time to do that, is I will simply go, okay, where's your jaw? If my jaw is clenched, I loosen my jaw. I ask myself, where's my tongue? It's always pressed against the top of my mouth. And so I relax that down. And then I go, shoulders, where are you? Check. And I go, you need to get a little further from your ears. I drop my shoulders just that little bit. And then I take one big inhale and I let that out. And honestly, that is so much help just to make me realize to be in the moment just for that little moment. Because that's the first step, is we have to get in the moment. We have to pay attention to how we're feeling, because that's going to impact our dog. Mm-hmm. Do I need to talk about the five? I can tell the five senses thing real quick. Is that okay?
Yeah.
In case people have need to hear.
Yeah,
about
it. I think you should. Yeah.
Okay. And I kind of do a little twist on it in my class that I really liked it. It was fun. It's kind of the seminars I do too. So the five senses, we know what they are: see, hear, touch, smell, taste. Yeah, five. And so what you start off with is you look around your space. What are five things that you see? And you're not actively, like, trying to look for every little tiny detail. There's no judgment in this. It's not, oh, there's a dirty floor.
Right.
So think about it as an infant would, you know, that's just learning how to see and learning how to talk. You know, they're not going to have judgment. So it's five things that you see, and you look around. Then you ask yourself, what are four things that I hear? What are three things that are touching, that I'm touching, and not actively reaching out, but, like, I can feel the softness of my socks. Mm-hmm. I can feel this hoodie. It has a really nice soft texture inside, you know, so it's things that are just touching you, the temperature, feeling how that's affecting your skin. Then two things that you can smell. And yes, my dog did fart, so I smell that. And then the last one is taste, just one thing that you're tasting. And I will go through this several times until I can feel myself being in that moment because I'm very aware of my surroundings at that time. And then the last thing that I really focus on is that breathing. And I'm not changing my breathing. I am being breathed. I'm just focusing on how that breath is moving. That enough is enough for me to get to that place where now I can focus on my dog. Because now I'm not thinking about all that stuff in the future and all that stuff in the past that I was right before I did that little exercise. Mm-hmm. So that's been a really powerful exercise for me just to help myself get in the moment. And I'm always doing the hashtag pay attention. I have it on the back of all my hats. You know, it's on the back of all my shirts. And so for some people, it might be like, pay attention. That's kind of rude, you know, because whenever I have my seminars, I'm like, okay, guys, pay attention. And what I mean by that is I want you to pay attention to how you feel. I want you to pay attention to your surroundings. I want you to pay attention to what your dog is experiencing. But one of the big things about pay attention is I want you to pay your dog for when they give you attention. Because that's one of the biggest things that people don't really see as a behavior. Right. And attention is the most important behavior that my dogs give me. And so every chance I get, I want to pay them for the attention that they give. And when we talk about all of this focus work, like we talked about, we have brains skittering around. If I can't focus on something for more than 2 minutes, then my session is no longer than 2 minutes.
Right.
So I have to build that muscle before I can start expecting more from my dog.
Right.
So those are all kind of the pieces that I start to put into it. And I know you had kind of said about, I wrote it down. What did I say? Kind of the mindset about looking for mistakes. Mm-hmm. And instead, I kind of feel like I need to teach people how to pay attention and how to look for being present, because then they can start to see what they're actually looking for. And that's where video comes in. Oh my gosh. Video is like the most important thing, because you're not going to see a lot of stuff in the moment until you train yourself to watch the video back and then you see it. And you can watch the video back in like 7 or 8 different lenses. Like, I love how Steve White does that. And he watches it back with 8 different lenses, you know, of like one time you're watching it, like how the dog's tail moves. Another time you're watching it to see, you know, how their top line is, or, you know, whatever the different indicators are. And so I think about that and I try to have myself in the video just as much, because I'm just as important. Because what did I do that caused that? And I look for the moment before and the moment after. Mm-hmm. And that video is so important to kind of speak to, like, why didn't you see that? And so again, it goes to, can you be in the moment? Because if you're not, you're not going to see it. So at the very least, let's watch it in the video so that maybe next time you can catch it when that happens. And I love
I love the moment before and after. Like, I'm always telling them, like, look at what happened before. Yes.
Right.
Right. Because that's what led. Like, instead of just saying, see, he did it wrong there. Well, what happened before?
Yeah.
What happened before is what, caused that to happen. And then, and yeah, we talk about video on here constantly, right?
Oh,
Yeah.
And I love, we were chatting with Holly Bouchard, and she had this great analogy, because being an art teacher, she talked about being a photographer, and you can't look at the entire dog and the entire situation and all of your experience and take it in all at once.
Yeah.
And so she said, it's kind of like having a camera. Use your focus of your camera and just focus on one thing. And then once you get really good at focusing at that one thing, now expand it out. And now you can focus on two things.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a skill that people have to learn. They can't just come into this and be like, oh, yep, I can see it all. They just can't.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, then the power.
That's so important what you just said, that focus on the one thing, master that.
Yep.
Because I think that's what I realized at one point, like, oh my God help my poor training partner. It's a miracle he's doing things with me. Where, because he's new, right? So I'd be like, dude, like 5 years later, all, you know, I'm still preaching the fundamentals. And then I realized, like, oh, you know what? Like, because I'm very linear, right? Like, I'm very linear. And so that's how I learn and whatever. So I master a step and then I do the next step, right? So I think that a lot of people, so I'll give you an example, like footwork, right? I would like draw lines on my sidewalk in front of my house, go out there without the dog and just do my footwork, like in the street, like a crazy lady, right? I did it day after day, week after week, month after month, until I no longer had to think about it. Now there was one less thing I had to think about. I no longer had to think about my footwork. So I no longer had to consciously pay attention to that in the moment, right? Because I mastered it. Then it's like, okay, how do you handle errors, right? Like I would say to them, every time your dog makes a mistake, do this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. And then 3 years later, they still forget to do it. Well, just master it so that you no longer have to think about it. Just like when you drive a car, and then master the next thing rather than trying to learn or master, for lack of a better word, like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 things simultaneously for 3 years and never being able to do that because there's just too many things.
Right. It's too hard.
Does that? And so when you're, I think that's similar to what you're saying, where you're like, focus on the one thing, get good at focusing on that one thing. And then once you're good at that, then focus on the next thing rather than trying to look at everything all at once.
Yes. And I'll take that in a couple different directions. Cause that's what I do.
No, that's good.
So I try really hard to practice as much as I can without a dog. Uh-huh. So I'll practice my footwork without the dog. I practice my my clicker mechanics without the dog. You know, like I'll have a bowl of popcorn and I'll set a criteria because I need practice of what criteria to set. If I have ice cream versus popcorn, there's a different frequency of how fast I want to eat that, right? And so it makes me practice my criteria setting too. And so I'm constantly thinking about what can I do and practice without my dog so that it can become easier for me, like doing helper work. If I'm having to constantly think about how I'm going to hold the angle of the sleeve and, you know, that I'm going to have to move my footwork in a certain way, I have to read the dog in that situation or bad stuff could happen, you know, and you don't learn it all at once, but it's over practice. It's over time. And that's where the compassion comes in because you have to really be kind to yourself to like, look, I'm not going to learn it all at once. The most kind thing I can do to myself and my learner is I need to focus on this one important piece, but identifying that piece can be really hard for people. And that's where like having mentors and coaches really come in. So like what you're saying, you need this piece, get this piece down and we can build on that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the important kind of foundation. When I say focus on one thing at a time, one thing that I do have a hard time with in training though, is sticking to a progression plan. I try and then I can't. I just get so bored with it. And it's not bored even. My brain is off to something else. And so I do a lot of spiral training, kind of like what Denise Finzi talks about. I never had a name for it, but I like that she calls it that. I'm always approaching things from lots of different angles. So like if I'm going to teach healing, I'm going to teach it using backup. I'm going to be using backwards healing. I'm going to be doing pivots. I'm going to be, you know, I'm having it from so many different ways and that it's all going to kind of just come together. That's how I love approaching training. But that's also me coming from things in a really curious place. And I feel like I never have a method or a strategy that is set for anything. And that's where I was trying to, when I bugged you that day about that post, it was, you did such a great post about that, about how even when you had something perfect, you were like, nope, I'm not happy with this. I think I can teach this in a different way. And I loved that thread. You share so much great writing.
I don't know what happened to that, but I do that. Like, that's what I started writing because I was talking to somebody about it this weekend because I'm like, I was telling them the story about Tyler, right? So Tyler was my dog. He was like extremely talented. I was lucky to have him. So the dog, you know, won 2 nationals, master hunter, qualified all age, 2nd in the World Cup, won the World Cup. So like, what else would I have to teach the dog, right? So he's formally retired. And I'm like, you know, whenever I sent my article, he's not happy there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it bothered me. And it had nothing to do with score because it's not scoreable. Had nothing to do with cues because he never flunked it. That dog never flunked, right? It had nothing to do with any tangible goal because he had achieved everything under the sun and then some. Like, it had nothing to do with that. It had to do with, like, I was like, God, like, why can't I figure this out? Like, why can't I make that better? And the last show I ever, and then right before, like, I formally retired him, and then I had just like a couple local trials I did for fun. And I was like, oh, let me try this thing. And that the last show I ever did with him, that thing worked. And that is the thing. So you'll be like, well, big deal. Well, that thing is the thing I use to this day with all my dogs, and it makes all my dogs comfortable and confident in a spot that's really uncomfortable for them.
Nice.
And I did it with zeal, like, and I'm doing it with zest. Like, people are like, well, he won the national championship. What else? I'm redoing everything. then I go in the ring and I try things and I'm like, whoopsie, flunk, that didn't work, you know, because like, because I'm always wondering, like, how can I make it better? And I don't mean better in terms of a score or an outcome. I mean, in terms of make the dog more comfortable, make the dog more confident, communicate more effectively. Because I am sure that every one of my dogs will tell you that I am as clear as freaking mud. They're probably like, Jesus Christ, woman, like, you are so hard to understand. Like, and I, that's what I think about all the time. And that's what I'm working on. Like, that's what I was working on today. Like, making his glove better. Like, he has no problem with the glove. Right. But I still think it could be better. Mm-hmm. Like, again, not in terms of a score, but in terms of, like, him being happier with it, him being more confident. Like that kind of thing. And I'm always like, huh, can I teach this differently? I don't think I've ever taught any, I don't often teach something the same way with the next dog. Like half the time, I don't even remember how I taught it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'm like, huh, let me try that. Well, that didn't work. Let me try that. That didn't work either. I think part of it is fear, right? Like people are afraid. As soon as something, the dog makes a mistake, they freak out, number one. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, my God, it's broken. I'm like, oh, for God's sakes, people, it's a mistake.
Right. That's information.
Afraid. They're afraid. Like, well, what if it goes wrong? Right. Well, then I'll teach it a different way. Like, right. I don't panic about that. And then they're like, well, but you know what you're doing. No, I don't. And I didn't. Like, I remember the very first time I decided that I was going to teach something differently. And it was a big problem. And so I had a choice. Either I do this thing differently and I'm on my own, like 100% on my own, because I was told if you do this, you are on your own. We are not helping you. Right. Or I take the safe route. And I don't know, maybe there's something weird in me that's different than other people. But I was like, you know what? I really know how to teach it that way. So I can always go back to that way, but I want to try this other way. Like, I'm just curious to see, like, can I teach it a different way so that my dog is not stanchion dependent, right? And if I hadn't been able to do that, like, I know how to teach a stanchion behavior. So I was like, well, if that doesn't work, I can go back and do that. But convincing people sometimes to, you know, like sometimes they'll do things I tell them on blind faith because I'm like, no, like, trust me, it will work. Mm-hmm. But it's, I'd rather they're doing it because they're like, cool, let's try it and see if it will work. Like, that's, people struggle with that.
That's the lack of curiosity. And it's the perfectionist cycle and it's our culture. I think about our schools, you know, we think about hand raising is about asking questions, right? Mm-hmm. Is it really though? Because most of the time that I would go into classrooms, I was part of this RTI program. You'd go in, you'd watch what the teachers were doing. Most of the time, hands going up were to answer questions. It wasn't to ask questions. So we've really changed kind of our culture as to answer the question, know the information, do it right. It's not about asking questions and figuring things out and being able to problem solve. So our culture has been shifted to know the answer, get the information. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to combat. And when you talk about teaching differently, I'm doing bite sports differently. You know, I do it in a force-free type way. I mean, there's not that many of us doing it. And so there's not a roadmap out there. And you have to be very curious. You have to be willing to make lots of mistakes. But the thing that I like to look at too is I don't feel like I make a lot of mistakes. I feel like what I'm doing is I'm just teaching. Because if I find a hole or there's something there, instead of going, oh man, I screwed up and I need to fix that, I don't think about fixing. I think I get a chance to teach that now. Mm-hmm. And that has been such a helpful mindset shift for me because I was so stuck in fixing. And that feels awful. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I can go, you know what? I'm just going to teach this now. I get an opportunity. It's the same damn thing. I'm still teaching. I'm still fixing the thing, but just my mind is different. And that's important. And you were talking about, I was trying to write all that down. The biggest thing that I want people to hear is everything is information. It's not a judgment. For a long time with UConn, oh my gosh, I absolutely let my training with him be my value because he's a difficult dog. You have to teach him the same thing over and over every day and work on it just very consistently for him to even start to grasp it. He's a sweet, sweet boy, but there's just something not quite right. And I would totally wrap up my identity in how I was training him or how he was catching on to training. And I was seriously to the point of like, I shouldn't be a dog trainer. Like I was really there. And so it's interesting how we do that, how we tie our value to what they're doing instead of just being able to say, this is just information. It's mm-hmm. not a big deal. Now that I have this information, what can I do with it? That's where my mm-hmm. like, wish, wonder comes from. And once I could do that, I could be more curious. That's where everything shifted for me. And the thing that you talked about that I loved with the pay attention, you're paying attention to the emotional awareness, the emotional feeling, and that's your constant drive to improve. That's the emotional part of it too. And I think that's a part that we've been so stuck in learning theory. And we start off with click, pause, feed, click, pause, reward, you know, and it's this linear piece that we are so stuck in for a while. Once you can get past that and you get your mechanics and you get that flow, now you can start looking at the emotional side of it. And that's where all of this joy comes from for me, where I'm like, dude, now the whole world has just opened up.
Yeah, the judgment thing is huge, right? Because I mean, and I know, like, I constantly have students like, oh, I'm a terrible trainer. And I'm like, oh my God, here we go again. I'm like, no, you're not, blah, blah. And then when I have a student that, like, very recently, one of my students was like, you know, I just realized that my dog's a terrier and he's low to the ground. And yeah, I work really hard on him not sniffing the ground, this and that. But you know what? Sometimes he's just going to do it. And that's okay. Yeah. I'm going to do my best to get him not to do it. And I was like, and then when I hear that, to me, that sounds so revolutionary.
Yeah.
It makes me go, oh my God. Like it really highlights how unusual that is. And she didn't used to be like that. Like it may, when I've had several students recently kind of have these epiphanies and I'm like, oh my God, this is the most exciting thing I've ever, right? Like that they're learning to just stop and just train the dog and just go with it. And like, it's not the end of the world. It's not world peace. You're doing a good job. Yes, sometimes it doesn't go well. And sometimes mm-hmm.
It's all just information.
And when I get to that point, I'm like, oh, thank you, God. You know, like, it's like a miracle.
Yeah. I know.
And I'm like, it makes me so ecstatic. But I'm like, everybody should be like this. But it just really highlights that the typical mindset, right? Like, and I do agree. Like, I think it's a societal thing,
yeah.
You know, where everything is like judgment based and everything is value based. Like, and am I good enough and better than, and this, oh my God, like where, what happened to just like my favorite thing in the world is like when like I train with certain people, like if I train with Lori or I train with the two women I train with on Thursdays, we're just problem solving. Mm-hmm. Like we're just helping each other and we're like, try this, try that. What do you think? What do you think? Well, what do you think? And then we talk about it and then we like try to figure it out. And we're like, yeah, maybe not. Well, that didn't work. Let's try that. Like that is so fun for me. Like
me too.
Fun and it's exciting and it's rewarding and it's like, yeah, it's fun. And we laugh. Like our dogs make mistakes and we're like hysterical laughing. Like that's what training should be. It shouldn't be like, oh my God, my dog made a mistake. Or like I went to a match not long ago and my dog made a mistake and everyone's like, including the quote unquote, like pretend judge, and they're all like, oh, and I'm like, good job, buddy. You're fine. Don't listen to them. You know, it's okay. You're all right. And they always look at me like I'm a freaking lunatic. Right. But like, and I like leave there. I'm like, oh my God, everybody in my head. I'm like, lighten up. Like the poor dog, it's a dog. Like he, like, what is even happening? I don't even know where I just went with this tangent. So
I think a lot of what I just listening to you guys talk about it, like all I think about is the heaviness that comes with all that feeling of that judgmental piece, yes. Right? That's like, when you see people, this is kind of where I am now in my stage of training dogs and trying to help people. Like I want it to feel weightless.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want that heaviness of what if it's going to go sideways? Who cares? Like, there's that. Keep it
wait lists. Like there shouldn't. And I just did a seminar this weekend, and every person who had the opportunity to come in one at a time, and they're willingly raising their hands to come in. I'll do it. I'll go get my dog. And they come in and I can feel it on them.
Yeah.
That heaviness. And they look at me and they go, they all said the same thing. I'm a little nervous. And that's just a thing. I think, like you guys said, it's a societal thing where they're in a crowd, or even if it's just you and your dog, like nobody wants it to go in any other direction but perfection. You know, that's the battle that we tend to have with dog training. But you have, like, to me, the flip side is, hey, it goes sideways. Like the challenge is there for me, which is now why I love to train dogs, is how do we give the information different? How do we go about this in a totally other, you know, that's why I love training with like really good people who are like, have the same mindset, like Petra and some of my other training partners. Like, they're like, huh, that was weird. I wonder why, you know, we just dissect, like rip it up. Let's tear it apart. And as soon as I said that to some of my participants this weekend, you could just see them lighten up. I'm like, don't let it, who cares? If it goes sideways, we're going to figure it out. So don't worry about it. And they immediately just were like, okay. Like they needed permission for it to be possibly not go the way they thought it was going to go.
Well, even and tying onto that.
It's not going to go that way. Like it is going to go sideways. Like I can promise you, your entire life of training your dog is going to be things going sideways.
True.
Like, so again, people have a very unrealistic expectation, right? Because they say like disappointment comes from expectation. If you're expecting it to go well and it doesn't, you're disappointed. But if you just know that it's just gonna go sideways, like stuff's, your dog's gonna make mistakes, things are gonna go messy, things are gonna get ugly, and then that's just, it's guaranteed to happen. So why are you surprised? Why are you upset? Why are you disappointed? Like, it's just part of it.
Well, I think we put so much shame in so much. So talking about that heaviness, when we get nervous, I feel like so many people are ashamed of being nervous. Well, I shouldn't be nervous right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I should be handling this. No, you should be nervous because you care about it. If you weren't nervous, there'd be something wrong.
Right.
And so I think we need to give ourselves permission that we should be nervous. But how do we deal with those nerves? Do we let it become destructive? Or, you know, can I sing the Pointer Sisters, I'm so excited. And it instantly changes that. So instead of going into a fear-based, it goes into, okay, I'm excited about this. And it's okay that I'm nervous about this.
Yeah, right.
And that other shame piece of it, I feel like I talked about this last week in curiosity. And I always wonder is, what if we didn't add shame to uncertainty? I feel like every time something becomes unclear or we don't have an answer, we feel shame about it or we feel bad about it.
Mm-hmm.
And what if instead we just got curious about it? It's just information. If I don't know the answer to something, it doesn't make me lesser of a person.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, let me go directly to, oh my gosh, there's a new opportunity. This is more information to give me something new to think about, a new problem to be able to kind of obsess with a friend, you know, or it's not a judgment. It's not a shame-based thing. So I just feel like anytime that I feel like shame creeping in because I don't know something, I have to change that immediately to curiosity. And curiosity is the answer to almost everything in my life. If I can just get curious about it, I can shut judgment off. I can then be creative about it. I can move forward with it. And I'm not stuck in that shame judgment mode.
Mm-hmm.
That was my thing this morning. This is my big revelation. Sorry, I remember earlier I was writing about it. So my big revelation. Okay. When in, I was talking about the art critique world, thinking about judgment, we tend to go to judgment first, right? So if we're talking about reading a dog, I know this was like an hour ago now.
Okay.
But in the critical analysis of art, we have four phases. That first one is description. So it's very objective. It's observation based. So when you were talking earlier about, you know, why didn't you see that? We have to train that muscle. So it's not necessarily looking for mistakes, but it's looking for criteria. That's how I'd like to reframe it. So if I can't do it in lifetime, I can do it in my video, but I'm going to describe. And just like with the five senses, I'm going to describe it without judgment. It's just facts. No one could dispute that fact. I'm not going to say the dog looked hungry. You know, it's like, I actually need to say the dog was salivating, you know? So I literally want you to describe. That's the first step. So things like the posture of the body, how they're carrying their tail, how they're moving, what direction are their ears facing? Or, you know, if they have floppy ears, you know, like which way are they orienting their eyes? You know, are they all blown out? Are they soft? Think about their mouth. Is it open? Is it closed? You get the idea, right? Mm-hmm. So these are all descriptions, the direction, the speed. Just describe what you see. This answers that what do I actually see question, which then now you can get into analysis. So some people can't really get into analysis yet. Like they need to learn how to describe more. And so I do a ton of this without being in training. Like I just do this as I watch my dogs in their day. In the analysis phase, you're looking for how those pieces are working together. So how is the movement and the energy? How's the rhythm? You know, how's the intensity of what they're doing? Is there a nice flow or is there hesitation? Is there engagement or disengagement? So it's how all of those elements are interacting together. That's the analysis. Now you can start interpreting. So this is when you can make this thoughtful guess. So what emotion or state might this represent? So in this context, you know, with this dog, with this learning history, what exactly am I seeing? Like, how are they feeling? That's the feeling side of it. That's the educated guess part, but I'm still staying open. And that's where the curiosity and the creativity come in. The last step is the judgment or the evaluation. And that's where we decide what we're thinking about it. So was it effective? Was it appropriate? Would I do it again? Would I change something? And that's the order it has to be in. That's the most important piece of that is we're taking this all out of order. And that's why we can't read our dogs. Mm-hmm. We're not practicing the observation over and over and over again. So I want to look at each of those pieces in my videos. I want to look at that in real time. I want to practice those skills of observation because then I can start to analyze. And once I can analyze, that's the only time I can start to interpret because I have so many people interpreting stuff so crazy to me. I feel like I'm getting gaslit sometimes. Mm. They're like, my dog is so upset. They're just, you know, on the verge of just having a meltdown. And I'm mm-hmm. looking at the dog going, your dog is happy. Your dog is ready to do this thing. And it makes me crazy. But it's because they've jumped straight to this interpretation and this judgment mode without having good observation and analysis skills.
Oh my gosh. Right. That's a good point.
And that's like a totally
second because I wrote it down, but I really want everybody to like, no, that's so important. You skipped the observation part and you went right to the interpretation and judgment. And dead wrong.
Yeah.
Like I've had people tell me and I'm like, dude, I don't think so. And they're like, oh, you know what? My last dog was like that.
Yes.
That, I'm like, well, so hello. Because I'm it's exactly what you said. Yep. I'm looking at the dog and I'm like, really?
Yeah.
I don't think your dog looks like
that. Yeah. I seriously would love to do a class just on this process. Like I was so excited about this morning of like, how is it that I'm able to read a dog? I've always had people tell me like, you're just a natural at it. But I'm like, I think it's because I've trained myself as an art teacher to notice.
Yeah. And that's a good point because, you know, I was thinking about this too. I think about that a lot too, especially because I'm like, we harp on this with our students all the time. Like, you got to pay attention. You got to be reading the dog. You got to be in that moment reading the dog all the time. Somebody said to me that, because I was a vet tech for years and years before I had my kids and got married. And then it dawned on me because they're like, you read dogs so fast. Like, how did you even know that?
Yeah.
And I thought about it and I thought about it and I thought about it. And I said, well, you know what? When I was a technician and I would walk into an exam room, I had to quickly really hone in on reading that dog to make sure I stayed safe. Mm-hmm. And it forced me to observe so accurately in that moment and learn to read just because I needed to keep myself safe. I think that was a big thing.
Safety is a great motivator.
Mm-hmm. Safety's a big motivator. I mean, like I literally, and the thing was, is like, I had X amount of seconds to make that decision on how I was going to handle that dog, you know?
I love that you said that. I never thought about it that way, but that's me in bite work too. Mm-hmm. When I've got a dog in front of me and I'm even playing tug or safety is a motivator. Mm-hmm. If I've got my body or their body in the wrong place, I could kill a dog doing what I do.
Yeah.
Because if they're coming down a football field's distance at full speed and they're hitting my arm, and I stand there like a brick wall, one of us is going to break, and it happens. Yeah. And so that safety is a huge motivator. And I never really thought of it that way with the sport that I do, but it's very true.
It
and
is.
I think maybe that is physical- why I learned stuff so fast.
Therapy, same. I'm on the floor. My face is right there.
Yep.
The dogs would literally walk in. I'd be like, I was at the far end of the room is where I, where my little area was. They would walk in the door and my hair would stand up and I'd be like, I got to watch that dog. Literally, like that fast. I'd be like, oh God. Or somebody would come in and which I appreciated them and they're like, the dog's muzzled and they're all over the dog. And I'm like, your dog's fine.
Yeah, relax.
Your dog's not going to do it. But yeah, it's that. Well, I also think it's my jobs, right, have always, like, so physical therapy, it's very much observing tiny little details, like breaking things down, breaking movement down.
Yeah,
when I do physical therapy on dogs, they can't tell me anything.
Right.
I have to notice the most subtle little hitch in their gait or the most subtle little thing that's off. So it's all like visual and my hands, like, right. But it's always like break it down and find, it's always find the problem, right?
Yes.
Like, and that's what I do with like dog training and then teaching. It's always like find, it's see every, so to me, everything's like blaring.
Right.
Like screaming, or like I'll tell people, like my, this girl that worked for me, she's really good. So she's a trainer. So anyway, she brings her dog over. It's playing with my dog. And we're standing in the yard together watching them play. And we're all of a sudden, I realize that the entire time the two of us are narrating what our dogs are saying as they're playing. And all of a sudden we look at each other and I'm like, oh my God. And then we start laughing and we're like, and people are like, I don't know what my dog's doing. And we're like having this whole thing where we're every movement they're making, we're like, oh, don't do that. Oh, that's okay. Oh, I like you. Oh, don't, but you're going too far. And so I think part of it I tell people too is like, start watching your dog at home.
Yeah.
Like my dogs are so clear when they communicate. Like they come up to me and they go, can you please get me some water? Like everything they do, it's like so obvious and like so clear. And I'm like, are you watching your, but people don't even watch their dogs at home because I would sometimes say to them, does your dog always sit like that? Like for rehab? And they're like, I don't know. Yeah. And in my head, I'm like, how can you not know? Like, I could close my eyes and tell you exactly how every one of my dog moves, like from lying down to getting up to like trotting in the yard to running, like every detail of everything they do. Like, I can tell which dog's coming up the stairs. I can tell which of my dogs is drinking. Without even looking.
Right, right.
But that's because you've trained yourself. You have that observation skill that you've honed in.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
And for people that don't have that, they, you know, there are so many people that just go through their whole life so oblivious to everything around them. I mean, I watched a guy run a red light yesterday and he had no clue that he did it.
No idea.
And he wasn't on his phone. And that's a red light with cars coming. You know, so for me to expect it's that guy to be able to notice how his dog sits, that's a big leap.
Yeah, that's why you're more patient and compassionate than I am. Because when you said that thing way at the beginning about compassion, I'm like, sometimes I'll look at my students, I'll be like, oh my God, like, what? Why? But, you know,
I want the lesson to be notice. I want so much just to teach people how to see and how to look at things and take information. That has been the whole purpose of my 6C class. And it's, I'm so amazed the impact that it's made on them. And it's so, being the first class, you know, through Finzi that I've been doing, it's like, it's so cool to see how this is translated to virtual, because this is what I do in my seminars. You know, I have all these.
Virtual is so good.
Oh, it's fascinating, because I'm like, how is this going to translate? You know,
so,
because
it works so
in person,
well.
I can see what's happening and I can kind of narrate, like you're saying, like I can narrate what the dog's doing in real time. And even the detection seminars, you know what, I did one in Iowa and it was so cool that the students were like, okay, can you do this tomorrow and narrate for my dog? Because I took Radish and I just narrated everything that I was seeing her do, how she was reacting to odor, how she was moving, you know, what she was doing, how, you know, just her speed, her, all these things. And I'm just talking about it in real time. And I just thought, you know, I assumed a lot of these their advanced handlers kind of did that. And they were like, no, I've never had someone do that in real time like that. That was so cool. but I had to train myself to do that. I mean, like, okay, for instance, like I was a high jump coach. I coached a lot of sports in high school, and one of them was high jump. I can't so much as touch my toes. And this is a sport you definitely have to be very flexible. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I've never done high jump, but I am so good at observing. Mm-hmm. And I watch so much form and technique. And I can see that, like, the penultimate step, that tiny last step detail right before they launch up, I can see those details because I've trained my eye
to it. Yeah.
And so when some people will say that, you know, well, if they don't do it, they shouldn't coach it. I had so many state competitors.
Yeah.
And I never competed at high jump. Like, it's not something my body can physically do, but I can see it and I can translate it and I can coach it. You know, so I think there's so much power to describing, not judging, not analyzing, not interpreting, like, knock all that off. You're not ready for it. Describe it. Like, to someone that's blind, the best thing you can do, and I used to with kids with artwork, is I would say, I actually had a kid call me once, like in the classroom. And I said, I'm going to be over here with my back turned to the screen and you're going to describe this artwork to me. And I'm going to create it as you describe it. Mine looked nothing like what they described. It was hilarious. But that's the whole point. It's like, learn how to describe it. You'll start to get better at seeing. Once you can get better at seeing, now you can set your criteria because you know what you're actually looking for.
Right.
You know, and now you can start actually analyzing. Oh, I can actually see that my dog is moving differently here than here. I couldn't see that before, but now I can, now that I can actually describe this. And now that I can analyze their movement, now I can interpret this and go, wow, that dog is lame, you know? Or, you know, the dog's really more excited about this than they are that. And I'm not, yeah. I'm still guessing, like even in my interpretation, but it's an educated guess now. And but now that, I can make those judgments.
Yeah, I think part of it too is like, I've always, like, I was a professional cyclist. Like, I was always very athletic, right? So it's the same thing. It's like breaking those motor patterns down into tiny pieces, right? Because it's like observing, describing, and then being able to describe it in such detail. Because like, when I say, if I say to somebody, break down a pivot, they never break it down even remotely close to how I break it down.
Yeah.
Never. Even remotely right. close to how I break it down.
Yeah.
And then I always have to like do a video of it because uh-huh. I can't even just because I can describe it and they don't understand.
Or their eyes, so their eyes glaze over.
Because in their mind, break it down means into two pieces.
Right.
Halfway yeah. and then all the way. And then do halfway twice and then go all the way every time. Right. And I'm like, no. Like teeny.
Yeah,
but it's so interesting. That's so good. You need to, we'll talk about that later. because the way you're, when I listen to your description of the class, like the six C's and this and that, I'm like, oh, that's nice. But then I'm like, oh, wait, no. You need to remarket it because every
I know,
one
it's so ethereal,
of my
kind of.
Students should be taking that class.
It's right? It's been pretty cool because it's all about
because
intention.
If I explain to them, no. The reason you are struggling is because you're missing the skills of observation
yeah.
and being in the moment. And that's what this class is going to teach you to do.
Yeah, that's what the
then
whole class
I
is really
about.
I could
probably get every single one of my students to take that class.
And I'll make all mine take your class.
You know what I'm saying? Because that's how you need to market and brand it. Because that is what everybody's missing. But if they hear creative and curious, they're like, yeah. Because they all want to get to the end, right? They want to get to the end. But what they need to understand is they can't get to the end because it's what you said at the very beginning, because I wrote it down. You said training plan, step one, teach yourself how to be in the moment.
Yeah.
None of them are.
Right.
You know, teach yourself how to observe. None of them can do that.
Yeah.
I don't want to say none, but, you know, that's a challenge.
Right, they struggle.
It's a
right.
challenge for everybody, right? And that, yeah, that's so
well,
great.
Well, and people don't realize that these are skills they have to learn.
That's
like
right.
confidence. Yeah. I have had to teach myself confidence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Work on that.
Yes. This last year, I have grown so immensely in my confidence. I can't even begin to tell you. To stand up in front of someone and do a seminar, I would rather, I'd rather do terrible things like go to the gynecologist and dentist in the same day, you know?
Oh my God.
Sorry to the guys out there. You just tuned out.
I love it.
And that's now so I can stand in front of an entire audience and I can sing to myself, you're so excited and you just can't hide it instead of, you know, crapping myself. And then I can just bring it and I can say, you guys, I don't have the answers. And I can be so confident in myself in saying that Because I love that I can say that to people. I don't have the answers, but what I do have are a lot of questions. And these questions are important for you because these questions are going to be the things that are going to help you figure out what you need for your dog. Like that curiosity piece is so huge. It's the backbone of everything that I do in my training. Because once you're curious, you get more information. That more information gives you more questions. Those questions, that's where creativity comes from. And when people say that they're not creative, you're probably just not knowing that you're being creative. Every time you change one little variable, you're being creative. That's the first step. You're practicing that creativity. And now we can start bringing that and start, you know, like actually rehearsing that as a skill. Like, oh my gosh, it gets so exciting. You start to see people when they realize they're actually doing those things. They just have to learn how to do it. So like curiosity, creativity, confidence, those are all skills we just got to learn. And if you're really interested in getting better at dog training, those are the intentions you need to bring into your session. Yeah. So I don't go into the session going, today we're going to get a better sit. Uh-huh. I have that as a goal, but then I have a bigger intention. So today I'm feeling like we're not very connected. So connection is my undercurrent. That's what I really want to focus on, you know, or the emotional state of my dog. You're like, I really want to see if I can make you curious about this skill today. So maybe the behavior is the sit, but this is the layer to it that brings it all together and makes it make sense.
Right.
It's that intention. Mm-hmm. And I think about confidence too. There was a moment, my friend Nancy, she had this beautiful moment that I share and I probably overshare it, but it was so powerful to me. And it's about that intention. She was with Keys and he's this amazing decoy and he set up this really challenging problem. And the decoy is the guy that wears the suit. And they were in these like two little teepees and the teepees have a very small space in between them to heal. And when she went up there, she knew that he was going to struggle in that spot. So her mind was saying, that's going to be a hard space. Mm-hmm. Guess where the hard space was? Exactly where she thought it was going to be.
Where she thought it would be.
And so right. Keys was like, what were you thinking? And she said, I knew this would be hard. He goes, no, it's not. This is not hard. This is easy. Go back there, get your mind right and do this. Mm-hmm. Come with confidence. You got this. And she did. And it was gorgeous. She went back to the starting point. She did her little like shoulders back and said, Ben, we're doing this, like literally out loud. And she healed up there and he was in it. He was connected with her and it was not hard at all. So many times our brains go, there's a point, there's a friction point, there's a difficult section, you know, and we make it harder than it should be. If we can bring our intention and our confidence into it, that can be the key for so much of us to just go, yeah, we nailed this. We can do this. I believe in you. I believe in me. I don't think a lot of us believe in ourselves and we don't believe in our dogs a lot of times. But that's
no,
that's
well, they don't believe in themselves. I think that, and then that bleeds down to the dog, right?
Yep.
Like, we gotta if build you don't skill. Believe in yourself, that's 100% going to, then you're going to question the dog. And for a lot of people, the dog is subconsciously like an extension of themselves, right?
That was UConn for me.
A reflection of themselves. And what's that?
That was UConn for me. I was like, dude, I'm a dumb human. Like, I can't even train a dog.
Yeah. And, it, and then it, but then, it, you know, I'm big on that whole labeling thing, right? I'm like, no. Like, because, you know, I had that experience with Zeal where, you know, he was a nervous dog. And so then I labeled him a nervous dog. And then I created a confirmation bias. And then I became an enabler. And it became this whole thing. Yep. So when I figured it all out, when I figured, well, someone helped me figure out that, you know, I was going down a rabbit hole. I went, it was kind of silly, but I went to the store, bought him a new collar, went into work and said to the girls, he is a confident dog. He is, you know, a self-assured dog. And did he instantly become one? No, but I made him one because I had changed, right, that image in my head. I was like, you're, and so I like never do that again. So I'm big with my students or anyone really, even at a trial, I'm like, no, don't say that. Like, what are you saying? Like, you can't say that.
Yes.
You know, you should be saying this positive thing, this, you know, but again, it's, I do think it is also in large part a reflection of how people feel about themselves. And I think having self-confidence in general is a challenge, but I think, you know, at risk of sounding like I'm 90, not that I'm that far from it. But,
oh my gosh.
Like, things are different now because if you go on social media, like I remember, and this was like a long, like a very long time ago, like 8, 9, 10 years ago, right? Somebody said to me, like, I don't understand. Like, I'm like such a, I thought I was a decent trainer and they, but I'm really not because like so-and-so, like, look at them. Like they're not that experienced. They haven't been doing this that long. I don't even think they're such a good trainer and they're winning every weekend. And I'm like, are they? Every weekend they're winning. Yes, they are. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, what makes you that? Well, go look on Facebook. I went on Facebook. They were not winning every weekend. But even still, like, it gives that illusion, right? Because people only put down, oh, look at how great we're doing. Oh, look at how great my dog's doing. Oh, look at how great I'm doing. And then it creates this perception that, you know, everything's sunshine and roses for everybody but you and your dog.
Yeah.
And I think that makes it even more challenging for people to, you know, be self-confident, not be judgmental, not worry about, you know, when things don't go right.
Right.
I think in general, I just feel like we're so fast to jump to conclusions. And I wish that we could be more generous with our observations because that's where the curiosity comes from. That's where all of the information comes from. And we don't have to worry about what other people are thinking then if we're just... If we're living in that space, you know, where you observe something and then you don't go straight to the conclusion of it, you know, the judgment of it, but just give yourself that time to be curious and ask questions. And I think people would be so much happier.
Yeah.
Well said. Oh my God, this was so good. This is going to really actually a tremendous help for me as an instructor because I've been really, thinking an enormous amount for probably like 6 months now, you know, how can I present things differently? Like, why is it that people are struggling with X, Y, and Z?
Yeah.
And so this has really helped give me like a much more clear perspective. And then now I can convey that to them.
Yeah. Same.
Yay. So glad to help. Wow. Y'all are like my heroes. So.
No, like for sure. Because sometimes I sit there and I'm like, what is happening? Like, why don't we see this?
What is happening?
Well, trying to convey it to our students, you know, like that. And that's why we teach. Like, we want to help them. We want to make it. Well, what can we give them to be able to see or find out what we're really talking about? You know, that's always the thing when you're talking. When you talk all this stuff to your student, they're just looking at you with those big eyes. And I go, do you understand what I'm saying? And they're like,
I'm like, do you understand? Because you're just kind of blankly staring at me.
No, I think that we want to help them.
Right.
Yeah. And they want to learn. We wouldn't be doing this. We'd be doing something else, right?
We wouldn't be doing the podcast.
We wouldn't be writing blogs. We wouldn't be teaching. Like,
yeah.
Because we really want to help them at the end of the day, right? And so if they're struggling and I'm struggling to help them, then I'm frustrated because I want them to do better, right? Like, I want them to be successful. And I don't want them to be frustrated or knocking themselves down. And so if I can just give them better information or a better perspective, then that helps them. And it also helps me. It makes, you know, it helps me feel better.
Yeah.
And it helps them. So, like, there's so many things on here. I'm like crazy looking paper.
I always got scribbles on my paper too. Scribbles, I went to the back side of it even.
All the notes.
Signals. I'm like, oh God, then I have to look at it later. Do I even know? But yeah, no, the observation thing, that's so huge. And the video, you know what's helped, been super helpful is, I don't know, I can't even remember how or why I started doing this. I want to say it's been several years. Time flies. My students would know better than me. I don't know what made me even think of it is, you know how like when you do video review and you're like at 30 seconds, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Then one day I was like, I'm just going to record this.
Yeah.
And then I have my little cursor thing. And I think a lot more instructors are doing this now. They weren't then because I asked about it. They were all like, what are you doing? But I'm like, I don't know. My students loved it because I could show in real time on the video and say, see right here. And they're like, oh, and then I'm like, see right there.
Yeah.
So instead of having to say like at 35 seconds, when your dog turned their head, blah, 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 I can just point it out and say it.
Yeah.
And I think that's been
so helpful.
Yeah. Definitely.
I think the most helpful thing that I've had in my class is the like, wish, wonder as the main structure, because all throughout my feedback is always, I like this, I wish this, I wonder this. Mm. So they know what to expect from me. And then what that creates is this habit of wondering. And that wondering is the curiosity space instead of any sort of judgment. And so I'm always trying to think about how can I model that we're not judging any of this? Because I think that's the hang up that I'm having with a lot of people and helping them improve, mm-hmm. is that they're so afraid of being wrong. And so instead of thinking about it being wrong, they're thinking of information and they're thinking about, well, now I wonder about this. And as soon as I can get that vocabulary in for them, I feel like that's been the turning point for the training. So anytime that I can get them to get away from the fear of being wrong and just start thinking that, and that's where all the stuff that I set up in the class is all about, you can't be wrong. Like, we're setting up all these problems that there's no wrong answer. So I think that's a great starting point, a great entry point for people, is to set up things that there's no wrong answer.
That's
and then
right.
you don't have to worry about that. And now you can practice being curious and asking questions.
Mm-hmm. You're so smart. Oh, well, I told you, my dog's always... Yeah.
No. It wouldn't be a dog podcast without dogs. Come on.
No, it's always UPS. It always happens. Every single time. It's
They're like
if
shut
it
up,
didn't
Mom.
Happen, people would probably be like, are her dogs okay?
Yeah, right.
They didn't bark. Oh my God. This was so, 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 so good.
Oh, good. I'm thankful
they
you
really
let me come
good,
on.
Crystal.
Really
and
good.
This yeah. was my aha moment of the morning that I was like, I want to record a podcast today. So I'm so thankful for you guys, because this is exactly what I wanted to talk about. So thank you for this
good.
Opportunity.
Well, yeah, thanks for sharing.
My students are going to thank you, because
that's right.
be able to like share all this with them.
Yeah.
Yay. And this is so Hopefully. Good. Thank you so much. I'm sure we'll be back together again at some point in the future.
Can't get rid of me.
More things.
Now there's more to talk about.
Yay. And it's so good to meet you, Lori. You're amazing.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. So good to meet you.
Yay. Well, thanks again,
awesome.
Friends.
All right. Thanks, everybody. And we will talk to you next time, whenever that is.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye. Thanks.